time? What is time? If you got the time, we're gonna talk a little bit about the TSN protocol today in our latest edition of the Audio Development Journal, my friends. What is time? Who am I? Merman. I'm a merman, Pop. So, the TSN protocol. What is it? What isn't it? Soon we'll see. As we spoke about in our last lecture, the role of the cloud chain is to provide blind attestation, and that is passive blind attestation. And the purpose it serves is to help content creators create PBPOP, pseudonymous-based proof of publication. And it can't do this alone, the cloud chain. Hello there, little Mr. Cloud Chain. I'm little Miss Cletus Cloud Chain. Come out to play. But little Miss Cletus can't play alone. She needs her friends called the TSN protocol in order to create this PBPOP. And in conjunction, the two together provide what is needed to make this PBPOP. Okay? It's going to be a bit windy today, guys. I don't know if you noticed, but that's okay because the wind is beautiful. So don't fight her. Let her blow you to until you've reached completion. Let her flow through you, right? It doesn't need to be sexual. It could be, you know, if that's your thing. I ain't hating, right? So we're going to talk about the TSN protocol today, guys. I don't know if you realize that. I don't know if I've spoken about that yet. But that's what this one's going to be about. It's all going to be about the nature of time and how time plays into the following of this TSN protocol. And what is the TSN protocol? Well, the TSN protocol is a set of rules that you follow in order to create valid identity blocks. And as a byproduct of such, valid identity references, right? TSN references, which are the building blocks of the Truth Social network. Okay? Now, in order to follow TSN protocol, you're gonna have to understand what I call the time rules, okay? And in order to understand the time rules, you're gonna have to understand the different types of time, okay? There are four types of time. Perhaps four and a half, as you'll see in a second. But you're gonna have to understand the different types of time, and you're gonna have to understand the applications of such, okay? meaning how do these different types of time apply, and to what do they apply to, okay? So we're going to go through the four and a half different types of time, and we're going to go to their applications, and we're going to discussing these applications, we're going to speak about to what do these types apply to and how do they apply. Alright, so bear with me. It's all going to make sense soon enough. So, in order to understand these different types of time, you're going to have to understand how they are measured, right? And in order to measure something, you're going to need a quantity, some type of quantity, right, to measure it in, right? So, in our case, we're going to be talking about what's called Unix Epoch Time, which is the number of seconds that have elapsed since, I believe it is January 1st, 1971, but you can fact check me on that one, right? And so it's going to be a lot of seconds, guys. There's going to be a lot of those seconds that have passed since this time, right? Now, the first type of time we're going to talk about is what I've called human time, right? Because it involves us humans creating it, right? Humans. Can't live with them, can't live without them, right? Oh boy. Funny things are funny, aren't they? So, in some senses, all of the following types of time are going to involve human time, and they're all similar in that they are measured in Unix Epoch Time, and they're all similar in that in their origin or at their outset, right, they all begin with presumably a human creating them, but the difference is how they are used and when they are used, right? And in what context that separates what I call human time from the next three, potentially three and a half other types of time, right? So the first type is human time. The next three and a half types of time are all what I would put under the category of what I call occurrence proofs. Now, you know, we're always looking at the edmontocracy of words, right? So occurrence proofs prove that are proofs that time has that something has occurred, right? Shocker. As opposed to existence proofs, right? Which you should probably be familiar with these concepts by now, but you know, you have occurrence proofs versus existence proofs, which are these sort of alternating pulsations within the system, right? That provide these opposing but equally important types of proofs, right? This sort of duality, right, which you find all across life. You know, it is true that that does occur. It's not just, you know, the alumniati concepts of good and evil. You do find these dualities in life, right? Or these contradictions. Oh boy, we're veering off, guys. Let's bring it back. So we have human time, And we have these other three and a half types of time, which are occurrence proofs. And occurrence proofs use a blockchain and state a characteristic about a block in the blockchain, thus proving that time has elapsed because there's work involved in block. And by stating this characteristic, the block must have occurred or been created, right? And so these three types of time involve three different blockchains, which is the Bitcoin blockchain, the Litecoin blockchain, and cloud chains as another category, right? And then the half goes to references, which are, or valid TSN references, which are produced as an after effect or need the cloud chain in conjunction with the TSN protocol in order to be produced, right? So let's give a for instance, right? For instance, a Bitcoin miner needs to put some type of timestamp into a block in order, they put it in their block header in order for it to be accepted by the, under the consensus of the Bitcoin network, right? And the reason that you can somewhat rely on these timestamps that are used in the creation of headers in the Bitcoin protocol or any other blockchain protocol is they have to conform to certain rules of their own blockchain, right? Namely, median past time and future time, which is like this idea of network time. So every blockchain has its own network time, which, like all the, like all, you know, so the three types of time all involve originally a human who is making a claim that human time has elapsed by including it in a block, and if it conforms to these network time rules, then it's a valid timestamp within that blockchain's network, and thus why we can somewhat reliably depend upon these timestamps that are produced within the headers of different blockchains, right? So by naming a characteristic of a block that has been created in, say, Bitcoin, for instance, you're creating an occurrence proof. And what's most valuable for us is to use the actual timestamp that is put in these headers as our occurrence proof. In other words, you could state the hash of the block. It would also be an occurrence proof. And hashes are used as unique identifiers of the block themselves. But the timestamps are shorter than the hash in terms of the length of the bytes. And if they're going to be used for comparison for us, it makes sense to use the timestamp itself. So we have four and a half types of time, guys. We have human time, and then we have these other occurrence proofs, which use Bitcoin, they use Litecoin, and they use your cloud chain who is you? You are the root from the perspective of this conversation. There's going to be lots of different roots out there, creating their own client, their own cloud chains, but we're talking about the hypothetical root, right? as it pertains to this conversation. So those are the other three: Bitcoin, Litecoin, cloud chain. The half is references, which are going to have to follow these time rules in producing their own timestamps. But given that they have followed the rules, which we're about to talk about, they will be producing a valid reference timestamp, which itself can be used as an occurrence proof for other what we call replies. If you can get your head around that, right? But we're going to get to that all. Our little cute little buggy. So here's the deal. I think I've sufficiently described the different types of time. Now let's talk about the applications of them. Well, let's talk about the what. What are these different types of time applied to? Well, they're applied to identity block headers, okay? And they're also, you know, that's one type, or one application, I should say, as it pertains to the what. They also apply to references, or TSN references, okay? And this is going to be important later in time, right? They apply a bit differently, or how we apply them is a bit different as it pertains to one particular type of TSN reference called the clout base reference, which is, you could call it, the first reference in an identity block. And I could go on and on about that. Is it really the first? But let's take that for granted. Effectively, it is the first, okay? So, in terms of the what, these types of time apply to TSN references and specifically cloud-based references, which are kind of like, in some senses, the beginning of a block. And then they apply to identity block headers, which are, in some senses, almost like the end of a block, right? Or the most recent part of a block, right? Now, the universe has just provided with me a segue into the how, right? We've got these types of time which apply to what. We just spoke about the what. Now, how do they apply? Well, there's going to be two different types of rules or proofs when we're talking about these types of time. And the first one is called the recency proof. And so you see the segue. And recency proofs are fairly simple. You know, is X more recent than Y? Okay. Or, in some cases, is X less recent than Y? But most of the time, it's going to be the posing of this question, is it more recent than Y? Okay? That's the first type of rule or proof involved in the how. The second type of proof or rule is called the proximity rule. So we've got these recency rules, and then we've got these proximity rules, okay? Which we're going to go further in depth into. Also, I should add that in terms of the what these types of rules are applied to, the headers, the references, but also what we call replies, okay? Which are different from references in that they're not included in identity blocks, okay? Or at least insofar as to how we've defined it as such. So perhaps there's a bit of confusion in that we've defined it as a reply are basically any a reference that is not included in a block. But another way to think about a reply is, well, in social media, you can reply to, you know, a video or a tweet or whatever it is. as opposed to the fact that you can, we'll say, quote a certain video or tweet or whatever it is, or you can quote with and then add your own input, right? So in that sense, you know, and you can talk about how it looks, right, or how it's presented, which provides the viewer a sort of different type of meaning. Like, when you quote tweet something, you're basically saying, I am responding to what's quoted. Well, it's tricky. They're both responding to it, but it provides a different feel, right? In quoting something, you're kind of saying, well, I'm responding to, like, the reference of this, whereas in replying, you're kind of saying, well, I'm replying to you, the maker of it. It's kind of like I'm presenting my response. Quoting is like presenting your response to the world, kind of, whereas the reply sort of implies that you are directly talking to the maker of it. Sort of, kind of, right? So the confusion I speak of sort of revolves around, are we talking about the display characteristics in how we call something a reply, or are we talking about how we've defined it, which is sort of like a TSN reference, which is not a reference solely because it's not in an identity block, right? But I digress. Well, not really a digression, because it's important, these distinctions, right? You know, if you look at the etymontocracy of digress, well, perhaps a correct label, regress, would be to go backwards, and we're not going backwards, we're going to the side on that one, right? But it's an important digression, right? Words, they are great, aren't they? Just like subtleties in language, they are profound, to take note of. Just like the ambiguity of words, it is funny at times. And you know what that is, right? That's when these word plays arise. That's the universe tickling your balls a little bit. There is relief in this life, and I find it from wordplay, from playing with words. Or are they the words playing with me? I don't know, but you do feel it. You do feel a slight tickle in the balls, and that's the universe for you. But anyway, slight digression there. The wind is so beautiful right now, guys. To feel it blowing on my face while the words tickle my balls is just... It is... Akie, I can tell you that much. So now that you have a bit of an understanding of time and the time rules and... you know, that I want to really dig apart the TSN protocol piece by piece and explain it all to you, or at least its current implementation as I see it. Again, we're getting close. I'd say probably 85% done, and I'll explain what the missing part is that we need to think more about, right, as we go forward. So it really is quite nice, the wind tickling my body, the universe tickling my balls, and the words dancing off my tongue. But you know what would make the trifecta complete would be just a nice glass of red wine to sip on as I take it all in, but can't have it all, or even a glass of white wine. And you know, they say, studies show that red wine is good for the blood flow, at least the most recent studies. Just one glass though, not, you don't need to abuse it, but it is good for the health. But anyway, perhaps a regression on that one. So as we approach the end of this first part here of our second topic in this series of lectures, I want to really dig into the TSN protocol piece by piece. So I hope you brought your shovels, right? Because there's going to be a lot of digging. But it should be apparent from our last topic that the absence of rules at the cloud chain layer is not, how do I want to say this? Well, let's just say instead, the void at the cloud chain layer that you might have perceived is not, it's going to be filled at the TSN protocol layer in the following of all these rules we're about to dig into. So instead of having all the miners validate them, it's going to be they're going to be self-apparent, and that if these rules are followed, you will be creating valid identity blocks and valid identity references, or you won't. And this removes the worry of error. I mean, in reality, we're going to be talking about software, which is going to be following all these rules, but the event of error in following them simply creates an invalid block, or an invalid reference. And then you can even say, well, different things about it. Well, it's invalid, but it's still from that person, depending on what potential rule was broken or this or that. But it just makes things a lot cleaner. But from the perspective of posterity, as it relates to PBPOP, it'll just be easily determined, well, regardless of intention, we can say that this block was valid or it wasn't, and or this reference was valid or it wasn't, and then even this reply was valid or it wasn't. All right, so we're going to dig into how to make these references and blocks valid in great detail in our second part here coming up. I'll see you then.